Henceforth, this podcast shall be known as The Hunger Games. Just kidding. This podcast is called Celluloid Stage, and this is a special episode where Zach let me talk about The Hunger Games, and he's here, yes. And he's going to interrupt me when I need to be interrupted.
These movies came out my last couple years of high school, so...
Oh, don't say that. they came out when I was in college, and my aunt took me to see them, or the first one, I should say, and I think she heard about it. She said, Ellen should watch this, and she got me into a whole bunch of stuff accidentally, because then I just wrote a lot of pages about the books, the movies, and what those things have brought to the world. So the Hunger Games as a book series is a young adult book written by Suzanne Collins that was then adapted to the screen, directed by Gary Ross. What is the production company? I'm seeing the logo. Thank you. I was like, I'm seeing the logo in my head. I mean, the movies were pretty huge. The books were, I mean, to me, were like one of the biggest series since like Harry Potter, Twilight.
I remember the books being popular right after Twilight came out. Right around when the Twilight movies came out. I remember that's when like people in school I noticed would start reading the books.
And now we've got things like Divergent, which is on my list, because I keep saying I'm going to read it, and then I get...
It's bad. No.
The book series?
Yeah, it's bad.
Okay, well, you're the only one who super, said that.
It's very rip-off from Hunger Games.
And now I hate the people told me to read it.
The author, like, gloats about how she wrote it in a week.
I don't know how many times I have to say this, but if you ever say you've done something fast and you think that that is a good thing, I don't believe you. Did you do a good job or did you just do it fast? I don't know.
It's literally like, because I think Divergent is one of the reasons that I never really... It's not that I didn't like The Hunger Games. It's that I liked it when I read it as a book, and then I saw it as a movie, and I was really underwhelmed. And then by the end of the series, when the movies were coming out, I just lost interest completely because there were so many similar movies and books that were coming out that were, like, Hunger Games light or Hunger Games-esque.
That's so annoying. Not... in your direction, I mean, in general. That's annoying for you because I feel like you would have really liked them. So I brought up the other series because like, when I wanted to write about this book, I was thinking, wow, like, look at this young woman who is, you know, taking charge of her own life. She's a good protagonist. Like, if I were to have one of my kids look at this, I would be like, oh, I'm glad that you're watching this movie. Like, not because it's gruesome and everything, but like the protagonist is strong, but in a somewhat believable way, and not in a girl boss way. Thank you, that's what I was looking for, because honestly I can't with that anymore. That's why I can't wait to crap all over that Cinderella movie, because I can see it in the previews that it's going to be so stupid. It's going to be so stupid.
So it's interesting that you bring up the protagonist like being like such a strong and interesting character, because I think in the book that's very much the case. But in the movie, I don't know if it's the performance or I think a big part of it is the lack of any kind of narration, because the narration in the book is so strong. And I remember that being so striking when I first read it.
Yep.
And the lack of narration in the movie and like the amount of silence that's in it, and Jennifer Lawrence, I want to partially blame the direction too, because I didn't feel this way when I watched Catching Fire the first time, is that she just looks bummed out to be there the entire time, which I guess is kind of the case.
Of course, but she's not going to be happy about it, Zach. Well, but
I just mean, like, in terms of her character, there's, like, no life behind it, almost. The best way I can describe it is it's closer to her performance towards the end of her run as being Mystique compared to, Silver Linings Playbook, where she's like, I'm here.
She's a great actor. She's
really good. I like her in things, but I don't know. In this first movie, I don't care about her.
Yeah, that's what I realized this, like, the last couple times I've read the book, because, you know, I read it once a year at this point. I've been noticing how much, you know, it's all first person narrative in the series. And when you watch the movies, you're getting all of these other perspectives of the character, like President Snow. You're getting, like, the back and forth between him and like other game makers. And that's even more prevalent when you get to Catching Fire, which we'll get to in a little bit. But and by a little bit, I mean another episode, because we've got a lot to talk about here.
Yeah, we do.
But you notice that a lot more in the second book, where you're like, wow, you had to break away to see what's going on in all, like, what are the other perspectives of this world right now? Where I kind of wanted to start was, I forgot I had this little book. It's like a graphic novel about Suzanne Collins, who, unlike J.K. Rowling, is a very private person who doesn't want to spew her stupid opinions all over the internet. But what makes her interesting is, so she did work in television. She worked on Nickelodeon for a little bit. She worked on Clarissa Explains It All, a couple other things that I wasn't too familiar
did she?
With.
I didn't know that.
She has experience there. And then someone talked to her and said, hey, you should think about writing kids' books. So she started thinking about what she wanted to do. And the first thing she thought about was Alice in Wonderland, which, I don't know about you all who are listening, but I've been talking about Alice in Wonderland for a long time, as is our other producer, Layla Gentil, who, like, she wrote a whole show about that itself herself. So there's a lot there to pull from, like fantasy, otherworldliness, all sorts of stuff. Coming of age. But in a way that can be playful, but also a lot more in depth than you give a lot of kids credit for. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to read a little bit. I'll jump around probably. Collins began thinking about the book's pastoral setting, so Alice in Wonderland's pastoral setting, and how strange it must seem to modern kids who grew up in urban settings. So she started thinking about, like, an underground kind of world. So the first books that she wrote were the Underland Chronicles, which they touched on death, violence, genocide, and biological warfare, which, you know, that's not necessarily the first thing you think of when you think of a kid's book, but I'm going to have to read those, because if I like her writing so much in The Hunger Games, I'm probably going to like these books too. But, you know, Collins believed her young audience was capable of understanding these mature themes. This is a quote from her. I felt that if my audience came with me from the beginning of that series, they would be able to understand those topics in that context. So, and then she started working on The Hunger Games, and used inspiration from her own life. Like, her father was in Vietnam and would come home and tell her stories about his experiences there. And she was another inspiration was that she was watching channel surfing and watching the news, like, between news updates about, like, the war in Iraq, and then also reality TV. So flipping back and forth between those two things was is it real? Was it entertainment? Like, what, why are we able to see both of these things at the same time? And why do we have equal access to both of these images, both of these types of images? So her quote is, there's this potential for desensitizing the audience so that when they see real tragedy playing out on the news, it doesn't have the impact it should. It just blurs into one program. I think it's very important, not just for young adults, but for adults to make sure they're making the distinction. Because the young soldiers dying in the war in Iraq, it's not going to end at the commercial break. It's not something fabricated. It's not a game. It's your life. So you can see kind of how that spiraled into this huge world that she created about the Hunger Games. And it's based in those things and also Greek mythology, and specifically the story of Theseus, where there's the Minotaur. And yeah, I guess a fight to the death. So you were joking with me before about what the books are based on.
Well, I was joking, but also I don't know. I'm weird on that, where it's like they're very similar properties. When the movie came out specifically, I remember The Hunger Games getting a lot of flack for being almost too similar to the film and novel Battle Royale, which is a Japanese film.
Right.
Which is the exact same plot, almost.
Is it kids?
Yeah, it's kids.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
And you know what I think that is? It's probably, you know, when two people have the same idea.
Parallel thinking.
Like, yeah, care. Yeah.
Well,
that's
yeah.
what I'm thinking happened.
But that's the thing is that.
Specifically cites, yeah, the Greek.
That's the thing, though, is that Battle Royale came out a full, like, 10 years before Hunger Games.
Right.
Well, and then Google was around, and I feel like you could have been like, true. Hey, is this a thing?
She probably could have looked that up, yeah. But also, I don't think that delegitimizes it, because if they're both, you know, you can't really tell me that Battle Royale is not going to be based on, like, that.
I'm not trying to delegitimize the Hunger Games, but I just think it's one of those things that have become, like, it was a very popular movie there, and it was not released here for a long time, but even, like, Tarantino saw it, and he called it, like, one of his favorite movies of all time for a few years, and it directly inspired a lot of Kill Bill, like, a lot of the action and the direction in it.
Okay.
And I think it's just interesting, because normally it's, like, if somebody's accused of some kind of plagiarism or some kind of, like, you know, borrowing of ideas, they normally just say, like, oh, you know what? Yeah, they did get to that first, but I think I have a couple different ideas. I just don't like the, never knew about it, didn't. It just comes off kind of fishy when you say it like that, when you just disregard it.
That's almost true. I never looked up, like, did she have any kind of statement on that?
I remember her saying she never heard of it. That was one of the things. I've got it right here. The parallels are striking enough that Colin's work has been savaged on the blogosphere as a bald-faced ripoff, and that there are enough possible sources for the plotline that the two authors might well have hit on the same basic setup independently. Which is totally, that's valid, but like I said, you could have Googled it.
Yeah, that's fair.
That's all I'm saying.
What I'm wondering is, because I'm not familiar with, I know that Battle Royale exists. I've heard about it a bunch of times, probably because of this controversy, and I have my tunnel vision too. But are there other concepts in there that relate to, you know, is there stuff going on with, like, gender, race, like, what's going on besides the fighting to the death?
The themes are very similar. I don't know enough about it and the author at the time to have, like, a full discussion about it. But essentially, one of the things that the release of The Hunger Games did was there was going to be an adaptation of the source material for American audiences that will never happen now, because people who are familiar with Hunger Games, which is most of the country, would probably be more familiar with it, would consider Battle Royale the ripoff, and it's a never-ending cycle.
But, you know, it's okay, because now we have Fortnite, which is Battle Royale.
Which is also that Battle Royale, the concept, came from, not the concept, but the modern sense of it, came from this series. And a lot of people, I remember when Fortnite first came out, they were like, oh, it's like a Hunger Games thing. And that's what, well, that's why the game mode is called Battle Royale.
Yeah.
That's why it's in so many things now.
That's why I figured that it had to do with the naming, like why it was named Battle Royale. I mean, if you're going to name it The Hunger Games, that's probably dumb. Like, that we would have You would have had to pay Suzanne for that. For
well, sure. there was one that I don't remember the name of it. It was called like the hazing or something like that. I don't remember the name of it, but essentially it was promoted as the main game mode is Battle Royale, but it was before it was called that, and they used Hunger Games like in their marketing, and then they got sued.
Oh yeah. Yeah, you should probably ask about that first.
Well, it was an independent game that was like a mod. Oh, yeah. So it was like, it wasn't even like it was officially promoted like that. It was just like, that's what they said on Twitter. They were like, yeah, it's very similar to this The Calling. That's the name of the game.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
All right. So, I mean, the next thing I kind of, what I did this time is I watched the movie first and then started listening to the audiobook kind of after I finished the movie, because I could, you know, I can throw that movie on at any point and just continue doing work and perk up when I need to. But something that I noticed the first time here, or maybe not for the first time, but more prevalently than usual, is like the very first couple of scenes, you start out with like that, with that quote that I started the podcast out with henceforth and forevermore this pageant, so that the punishment of the Hunger Games, it's going to go on forever because there was a war. And you cut to a game maker, Seneca Crane, being interviewed, and it's like he's being interviewed as a politician. He's talking about this painful history that the country has. It seems like he doesn't really have any experience with that pain. He's just talking about it as if he knows it's there and he knows that that's what he's supposed to talk about. Because then you hear that from him, and then you immediately cut to Prim's screams before he's able to answer any questions. And that really hit me this time around, because it's like this big, bright interview space and then immediately dim lighting, shaky cam. It's scary. Did you feel that?
I mean, I guess I kind of did. I don't know. I, for some reason, there's some odd visual reason, I want to say, where I just cannot connect with this movie. I cannot feel for these characters, and it's not the performances, I know, because she's doing a good job, and so is he. I think the color palette sucks. I think It looks really cheap, and I think it is that like handheld shaky cam that makes it look really cheap. And I
really?
Yeah, something about it just doesn't, it looks so fake to me for some reason.
I didn't feel that way until they start to I don't even know if this is the first or the second movie. Oh, it's got to be the second one, where they end up turning over the black market when the new peacemakers come in. That I got. It was like, wow, that looks really cheap. Like, that's clearly a soundstage that they're just throwing shit all over the place.
Which is so weird to me, because these are massive movies. And granted, Lionsgate isn't like one of the bigger studios.
Yeah, that's why you can watch this movie for free, like on IMDb with right. commercials.
Yeah, and it's like, and Jennifer Lawrence was kind of unknown at the time. She wasn't. Mm-hmm. This movie kind of made her a household name. Liam Hemsworth was known as
Miley
Cyrus's boyfriend. Yeah. And Josh Hutcherson was like on his way out.
Yeah. I don't even know what he did before this, but
a bunch of kids' movies. He was in Zathura and Bridge to Terabithia.
Him in Zathura. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Well, Jennifer Lawrence did a lot of, she did a couple things beforehand. I think the most well-known thing was Winter's Bone. Yeah. And did she win something for that?
She was, I think she was nominated for, for Best Actress. You know what? I don't know if she was, actually. I know Winter's Bone.
She got a lot of, attention for it. Like, she was, like,
well, yeah, because then the year after that, she was in X-Men First Class, and then I think that was probably the first time I saw her in something. And then she was like, she was a daughter on a sitcom too, I think. So
why?
I mean, like,
it just seems like a waste of time at that point.
No, like before she was in any of those.
Oh, okay, yeah, no, that sounds familiar. I think I remember reading that somewhere. Before we move on from that, like you hating those scenes,
I don't hate the scenes.
I know,
I just
I'm
think,
using hate as a strong word.
Well,
but yeah.
No, it's not even the scenes. It's just as a whole, like something just doesn't feel right to me when I watch this movie. And it just, it always felt very cheap to me for some reason. Because it's, it, comparatively, like, you were talking about how there wasn't really a bigger movie, like, a bigger series like this since Harry Potter, really. Yeah. Like, of something that was written recently. Like, clearly there's been, like, Avengers and, like, Star Wars.
Yeah, like,
and
a very, it was very, like,
they made the movies young adult. Very close to when the books were released. Like, right. It was a fresh IP. And if you look at the first Harry Potter movie, like, they give that the full treatment where it's, like, everything.
Well, they tried.
It's so believable. And
except
it's
for
so
the CGI is so bad. Seth.
Well, that's so bad. That's dated CGI. That's different.
I know.
Dated is not. I think yeah, even I when this know. Movie came out, like, just something just did not sit right with me. And I think it's the direction of the movie. Partially. I think the other half fair. Is the color correction, because it just looks so bloomed for some reason. And it, I don't know, it's just...
It looks so what? What's that word you use?
Like, it looks like the camera is in bloom.
Okay. Like, well, is that because the... I mean, District 12 is supposed to basically look like shit.
I think the whole movie looks like it.
Oh, okay. Then I don't know. I'm not seeing what you're seeing.
I think the costume design is also very not great until they get to, like, the Capitol. I think that part's solid, but besides that, they look like...
Well, what do you want for costume designs in a terrible, like...
Play? Well, it's not even the costume design. It's the for some reason, just... Well, I mean, like, it is the design, I guess. But they look like community theater-like costumes rather than, like, a $78 million movie. Where it's like, they can do, you are able to do sci-fi and, like, rags and make it look believable. But for some reason, there's just something about it that it, I know it's supposed to look bland, but it should still catch my eye and I should be like, oh yes, that's believable and that's interesting looking for, like, this future landscape. This is a dystopian world and I just don't feel like it's believable enough. It's kind of like, a movie series that is also very similarly dystopian is the Purge movies, which I need to buy into your world, I guess, and I just can't do it with this movie.
But it's better when
in the book I'm able to, though.
But do you find that you're able to buy in when you get to Catching Fire?
I don't know if I'm able to buy in, but I think it's a little bit more forgiving because I think that the handheld camera isn't used as much, and a lot
of
the...
That's just something that you don't like, but I like, so I think that's the difference.
It's not even, like, it's not really a preference. I think it's just, or like, because you can make handheld cam look good, but it's the whole movie looking like that, just something just looks off to me, and it makes it me think that they didn't put, like, a lot of thought into it. And now I'm, like, slandering an entire crew of people. It looks like they didn't put the thought into the shots that it would have deserved. It seems as though it was kind of rushed to make sure it, like, hits in that, like, soft spot of, like, all of the people who like these books are in, like, early college, late high school. Like, we need to make sure we put this out and we get it out fast. And we gotta... It came out in March, I think.
Yeah,
I remember
they honestly could have
Avengers.
Taken their time because people would still be obsessed with it. I mean, I'm looking at a Mockingjay poster on my wall. Like, I probably still would have been fine if they
here's the thing,
took
though.
Their time.
If the movie didn't come out and it didn't create, like... it, because this movie did technically create three big stars.
Mm-hmm. And brought Woody Harrelson back from...
Well, Woody Harrelson. Like, not,
he wasn't doing too much, though, I don't think, until the, and then he started being more things after.
Yeah, I'd credit Zombieland for doing that for him.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
Zombieland was first.
Yeah. And then Elizabeth Banks, I think, it definitely did a lot for her in terms of.
Was that before or after 30 Rock? Either way, I think.
I think it was
after. I think it's after. Because I remember. Seeing her in that for
well she was well, always in first, bit but. Roles for the most part, and then this movie segued into her. She produced the Pitch Perfect movies after that and then directed some of them, and now she's like a pretty she's going to be directing like an Invisible Man movie or Ooh, Elizabeth okay. Banks yeah is going to cool. be Yeah.
How many of those are we going to have? We're going to have to talk about 1,000 movies for that one again, too. Well, before we start bitching some more, I mean, because if I let you complain about this movie the whole time, first of all, you're going to make me cry. And second of all, I don't want
to
do it.
I'm not trying to. I'm just trying to say, like, and it's been since the movie came out, too, that I felt this way. Because I remember I was really excited to see it because I liked the book a lot. And then I watched the movie and I was just like, that's it? Like, this is what I remember people loving this movie. And there was also a big gap between this one releasing and the next one coming out. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that was because they put a little bit more care and time into the next one.
Oh, yeah. You can kind of tell that Jennifer Lawrence aged. She looks like a full-on adult in the next one. I mean, she was already a full-on adult, but...
Which also, I'm looking at the poster for the movie right now. Terrible poster. Awful. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
It's pretty bad.
Yeah.
It's like right. All of them are. Very close up on her face, and she's kind of in motion. It's like she could have had her sit down or something.
Well, I just mean like all of the posters for these movies are the exact same idea, and they just all look not great. Like, who was the artist who did this?
I don't know. Well, they're fired. That's what I say. So I had mentioned, you know, Harry Potter and Twilight, unfortunately. Because after I saw this movie, I was like, well, I really like this character. I mean, like you said, it wasn't like the movie hit me over the head and was like, okay, this is the most amazing thing I've ever seen. But then I read the book and then I was like, whoa, this character is great. And
wait,
so
when you said you watched the movie first?
I did.
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
I hadn't been reading a lot, like, for pleasure, really, in school by the time I got to grad school part one and two, because there's a lot to read. So,
yeah.
While I was thinking of thesis topics, I know I wanted to talk about young adult literature. I really did. I just didn't know exactly how to put my finger on it. I thought, oh, I'll write about Harry Potter, because I read those books 1,000 times, and, like... The female characters in that book are amazing. Like, obviously, Hermione's pretty awesome. And then you have characters like McGonagall and, like, you get... Whatever. I don't have to go through the whole thing. But... and then also, then I wanted to compare it to, like, Twilight, which is also fantastical. But, you know, Bella sucks, right? That's what I was thinking of the whole time. I was like, well, that's an easy comparison. That's too
Which is too also easy. What I was thinking when I saw the color grading of this movie. Like, mm-hmm. they were still
I'm
trying to
I'm glad you brought that
appeal.
Up, because do you know that deer? I wrote down, look at that deer shot. Because at the beginning of both movies, they are in the woods, and there's a freaking deer. And then in Twilight, I think it's when she's starting to go on about being some sort of, I can't even remember what the dialogue is there, but it's very stupid. Something about how if somebody wants to kill you, that's hot. I don't know.
You know, I think like you that. Just, you nailed down the connective tissue of like,
that's why you hate
I think,
it?
no, of why I think that this movie... just like visually kind of sucks is because it does look a lot like Twilight, and Twilight, like, visually, I'm not even speaking content wise the color grading and the costuming, everything about it just looks like shit.
Yeah, it looks pretty cheap. But yeah, they're right under my, oh, that's a deer shot, like in Twilight. This the very first thing I write about Gale and my mother, and if Shannon McRae is listening also, you'll be you'll know that what I'm going to say is that Gale sucks from day one. They're starving in District 12, and he immediately causes Katniss to miss her shot at the deer. It's like, they're starving. I know you're trying to be fun, but come on, dude. Like, they need food.
Yeah, what a piece of shit.
What a piece of shit. I can't stand him. I don't know. He's just got this
toxic...
How do
we feel about Liam Hemsworth in general?
He's boring.
Yeah, okay.
But His character
Chris Hemsworth, brother sucks.
His character as a whole is like the complete embodiment of toxic masculinity. And that's one of the points I made in my paper, because what I wanted to do was talk about female protagonists and like how you can still kind of have issues like trauma, emotional trauma, and not be a complete idiot. Like Bella, I really tried to. There's a lot of sides to this, because I was kind of trying to figure out how I could not just straight up hate on that character. Like, there are certain times where she tries to take agency, and then immediately as soon as she tries to make some sort of decision, some active decision in Twilight, she's immediately punished. It's like, I might have mentioned this about Snow White before. I don't know if it was just you or if it was on the show, but it's the same thing. Well, if you think about the story of Snow White, it's literally anytime she makes a decision, she almost dies.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah.
She almost dies.
She kind of sucks.
That's Bella. I mean, yeah. And then it's not even necessarily Snow White's fault, but it kind of is, because she's pretty dumb. Like, she's running through the forest and she falls over and she's like, oh no. And then she almost gets eaten by forest animals, except for they're cute and they're deer, so it's fine. Another deer, damn it. But so basically, I wanted to talk about a bunch of different books, but I did not have time to write about Harry Potter, Hunger Games, and Twilight. That's too many books. So I kind of just decided to focus on Katniss. I did write a little bit about Bella, but I was like, I can't. I wanted her to be in charge of her own sexuality, because that was an interesting point. But it was like, you're also doing that in a way that's gonna maybe kill you. So that's not safe or good. I don't know. But going back to the thing I like, I got this time around, since writing my paper, since watching this a lot, like in the beginning of my love for this series, this IP, there's been a lot of controversy surrounding the Olympics, like our actual Olympics.
Wait, what's that?
In real life.
I know nothing. Wait, what? So, related to the Hunger Games?
Not directly. So I'm making a connection here. But the Olympics, in recent years, it's been discussed that there's a lot of money that goes into this, but then the hosting countries don't necessarily have the infrastructure to support the games, and so it ends up actually kind of screwing over the country, and there's like all these empty buildings, all these empty things just all over the place. There's a political and economic wear and tear on a less than developed country, which is kind of acknowledged in the Hunger Games too, like not necessarily in terms of a less than developed country, but there's wear and tear. And then they also kind of, they monetize it too, to where you can then go and visit the old Hunger Games sites, much like you can go and visit like the unused Olympic arenas and things like that. So that was just kind of a small parallel that I found watching it this time around. To which I don't know what the solution is there for the Olympics, though. It's like, we could have it in one spot, but also it's not necessarily going to bring everyone together that way. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is there.
I don't think there is an answer.
I think it might be maybe don't have corporations in charge of it, where we have to look at Pepsi ads 1,000 times. I don't know. I'm not sure.
That's true. Either way. I'm also curious about the viewership for the Olympics, especially this most recent one, because I don't think it was too high.
I don't think it was too high.
Yeah, I figured.
There's a big change in between the first book and the first movie, in that Katniss actually has a friend who is a girl named Madge, who is the mayor's daughter. And you don't see her at all in the movie. There's not really any time, I guess.
I'm sorry, in a world where it's like Katniss, Madge, though, it's like a 1950s secretary.
Is she just an old-fashioned lady that, I don't know.
Just imagine her, like, chain-smoking cigarettes at her desk and typing away at the typewriter. Like, yeah, oh, yeah. Ask Madge.
Ask Madge. She's got the pens. So, you know, there's the moment where, you know, Katniss is getting ready for the Hunger Games. Like, they are doing the like the prep team comes and they're like, wow, you look like shit. Katniss is too hot already at the beginning of this movie. There's a whole, like, to-do about how dirty and unkempt she is when she gets to the Capitol, and this just doesn't translate in the movie, which, of course, it's not going to, because this is a movie that we're watching, which mm-hmm. I feel like is, like, a layered comment on just sexism that's written into everything that we do. It's just, like, ingrained, where, you know, it's meant to be a comment in the book, I think. And then we just don't even really get to see that. It's just like, wow, you look like crap. I was like, Jennifer Lawrence has a beautiful braid and she's walking around and shooting things with an arrow. I think that's pretty cool. All right, whatever. I didn't know how else to describe it. I was like, there's nothing wrong with her.
I think it was a good reason.
It's not like she's super hairy. Like, that's kind of what they're like, yeah, she says in the book, like, yeah, they had to wax the crap out of my skin and all that.
But obviously, then again, like, how bad do you want to see a movie where they wax Jennifer Lawrence's asshole?
I don't, but I'm just... that's a very personal question. I know what you're getting at, but also I just thought that was interesting because that happens a lot. Like, anytime someone is supposed to be undesirable looking, what did I mention it in Cinderella again, where it's like, oh, look at that ugly woman, she's just got dirt on her face.
Yeah,
like, that's it. I don't really like Katniss's speech to her mom in the Capitol before she heads to the Capitol. It just seems bitchy without any pain. That's what I'm thinking. Like, that's where I'm coming down to your comment on the directing in this movie, is that mm-hmm. I'm not seeing pain come through her as much as just,
and
like,
I think
you said,
it's
boredom and rage.
Yeah, I think it's interesting to mention the other movies the director has done, because I do like some of them. They've also made Seabiscuit, which I really like, and Pleasantville.
Yeah.
I like
both
Pleasantville
of those did
a lot.
Really well.
Yeah. I also saw another thing on here, but I lost it as soon as I found it. Let me pull it up again. They also made Ocean's 8, which I wanted to like, but I just could not, because it's not very good.
It was fun, but not great.
Yeah. Well, I mean, 2/4 of the Ocean's movies are like that. But he also wrote Big and Dave, and those are great movies.
I like Big, but it's very creepy. I'm like, that is,
yeah, the ending
is not
weird.
An adult man.
But also, but also Clueless. I like Clueless, and we need to talk about that relationship in that movie.
Oh, we will. Because that's based on something. Clueless is based on what? Some Shakespeare.
I don't know.
It's based on something. I'll look it up. Whatever.
I like Pleasantville, though. That one's fun.
Yeah. I don't think I've seen that, but I've heard
say
that it's good.
I'm surprised you haven't seen that.
I don't see a lot of things.
I mean, specifically that one, because it's like, I don't know. It seems like a you kind of movie, I guess.
It's from 1998. Oh, it's Reese Witherspoon? Okay,
yeah.
I'll go watch that.
And Tobey Maguire.
And Don Knotts.
And Paul Walker.
I was just trying to...
We're just going to name the cast of Pleasantville for the rest of the episode.
Then also, this guy was a PA. No, I'm kidding. Gail immediately comes off as a murderous twerp when he's saying goodbye to her, too. Which, it's kind of like that in the book, but kind of not. Maybe I just don't like Liam Hemsworth. I don't know. I don't like Gale in the books either, but still. He's like, how can, like, humans and hunting humans and hunting animals can't be that much different? It's like, it kind of is, though. Like, I know what you're trying to say, man, but it's not really coming off the way you want it to, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't know. I get the point he's trying to make in the context of the world they live in.
Right.
Because at the same time, they're very cut off from everybody else, so it might as well, like, meeting anybody of a different class to them would just feel really weird and uncomfortable. And he's right. A hunter himself, and he's been preparing to be in the games. Like, that's I was...
His name
like,
is in the...
Like, he put it in 34 different times or whatever.
Yeah.
Across... Yeah.
So he's pretty hard, is what you're saying.
I'm saying, like, he might be a psychopath, but yeah. Also...
Oh, for sure.
But also, like, he kind of... This world has conditioned him to be... To think like that also.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because, like, I have been always saying that he's kind of a little too... just detached, emotionally detached to things. And a lot of that is definitely not his fault. I think the only thing I really fault him for when I get down to it is the way that he manipulates Katniss's emotions in a way that's super selfish, and I don't like it. It's like as soon as he sees PETA getting attention from her, he's all like, oh, well, I don't like that. It's like, you guys aren't together. You're friends. Like, why are we even having this discussion? Everyone's dying, which is what Katniss told you 1,000 times. That's why I don't like him. but then I'm glad you brought up the class struggle a little bit, because I was kind of going to go into that a little. PETA, even though he lives in District 12, he is a little more well off than Katniss and Gale. So he says, I just don't understand what's wrong with getting a little bit of help, which, like, really grinds Katniss's gears, because he doesn't know what it's like to need and to want so much as she and Gale do. And that really comes through in the book a little bit more strongly, I think.
I haven't read the book in, like, 10 years, but I'm going to agree with you, because... As I've stated, my position on the movie is that it seems to not capture the tone of the book very well.
Yeah, yeah. District 12 should be full... Oh, here. I was trying to figure out what I was writing down. My note says District 12 should be full of winners, but they're not acknowledged as deserving. So I wrote that note right after we talked about My Fair Lady, and... Mr. Doolittle says something about being deserving or not being deserving. He's making a comment on class and, like, how if you're already in the lower class, nobody wants to give you help because it seems like you're not deserving of it, which could get into discussions of welfare and, you know, basically state assistance and things like that. And District 12 people, they're pretty hard because they have to, they really have to survive on their own, just on their own, pretty much. They're not getting too much assistance. Same with District 11. Basically, like, 10 through 12, I think, is what that's where the cutoff is. It could be up higher. I can't remember. But
yeah.
These people are being punished for lack of resources. And... So that definitely carries through a lot, because then you get into, like, the career pack, which are the people that have been training for this competition forever, which, you know, if you really think about that and break that down, the people who have the resources, the people who know exactly how to survive because they've been given the tools to do so, are winning this thing that is supposed to help the entire country remember this time of pain, this terrible war that they had. So it's just a continuous punishment of the lower classes, because they did say it at the beginning of the movie they didn't say it, but there's the text at the beginning where it's there's a revolt, and that's why the Hunger Games was established, was because the states, which isn't like the United States, but the districts rose up against the government. So it's just a perpetual and continuous punishment of the people for, you know, sharing their thoughts, trying to succeed.
And I do like that idea that it's like, it is a very pessimistic view for a young adult. novel, mm-hmm. and I like that aspect of it. What I was going to say when you were talking about, like, the conditioning and everything is I don't think Katniss should be the focal point of the movie, almost. You know who I think would be, like, and I hate saying this because it's like, you shouldn't, we should just leave things the way they are. I think reading this, or seeing this story from, like, Haymitch's perspective,
I knew you were
would be
say that.
So interesting because he's got PTSD around it, and it's
but
I don't know.
Here's
that...
what you get, though. You know, you end up learning that, you know, Haymitch pretty much has PTSD, and then as the books go, you're like, oh, and also here's Katniss's PTSD manifesting in like real time.
But
and
also,
we're gonna get
I
there,
think,
and you're gonna hate those movies. Yeah. But that's exactly what's happening.
I think it's handled very poorly in those movies, and that's all I'm gonna say about it for now.
Yeah, I can see what you're saying. It's a very two-dimensional demonstration of what's going on, because it is really covered well in the book. Like, she does the work.
Well, that's almost books. What I mean, is that in that I think this story would be more interesting if we got, like, other perspectives based on, like, the sequels, instead mm-hmm. of, because we're going to talk about it soon, but the second one is, like, there's just another Hunger Games, just because there needs to be for the plot to continue, basically. And it just would have been so much more interesting if they didn't do that, because then the third story is just something completely different. And it
here's the thing. They needed to have the next Hunger Games, because that's, you know, you do it every year.
Well, and I understand.
They wanted to find a way to punish the people, and so that I know what you're getting at, but
get that aspect the in between story, and, but I mean from a writing perspective, like,
oh, I know what you mean.
I think they could have crafted something better, but these books were written 1 year after the other. The movies came out 1 year after the other, so it's like you don't have that. And I mean, I don't know what her contract was, or what the stipulations were for releasing these stories. But I don't know. I just felt like there could have been a more interesting way to go about that.
I think she's leaving herself room to write more. Because did you read the newest one that came out?
No. Because as we established, I kind of stopped caring about these movies.
Right.
Around 2014.
You should. I actually lent the book to my aunt that I mentioned earlier in the recording. But after
she... Is that
a
prequel?
It is.
Okay.
And it's about snow. And it's very good and very confusing. It really gives you a lot to think about, especially remember how I said that there is a layer of depth regarding class in the beginning, where it's like, oh, this game baker is being interviewed, and then you cut to people that are not doing very well. There's like another layer on top of that when you get to Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes, because you learn more about where Snow came from, where he lived a lot of his young life, and like, what kind of formed his young man life, his the way that he sees the world. So it's pretty interesting. I think there's a lot of stuff that you now understand about Katniss after reading that book, and the relationship between Snow and Katniss that you didn't get before. There's a lot of tension that Katniss doesn't get, but Snow is definitely projecting. So it would be interesting to see what you think about that. Maybe we'll probably do one on that.
It seemed like one of those things that I remember hearing about before it came out, and then once it actually did, it just kind of disappeared from my conscious, and I think maybe most people, because I just stopped hearing about it, too.
Yeah, me too. Oh, yeah, published in, well, it could be because of the pandemic.
Had to have been, like, 2020.
Publication date, May 19th, 2020.
Well, I feel like you can't blame the pandemic, though, because I feel like the place I would have heard people talking about that would have been the internet. And
oh, yeah. Yeah. I did hear about it, and I was really excited, and I immediately bought it, because I was like, oh, this is the thing I love. I think it is set to be filmed... Ugh. Ooh, see now, which I don't necessarily need.
Yeah, I feel like, I don't know. I've had this conversation repeatedly with people, and it's like, when you have a solid trilogy, you can, well, I guess, technically I'll call it a trilogy, because it's one movie split into two halves. Like keep it that way, basically. But don't spin off and try and create all of this additional material unless your story lends to it, essentially. Like, I don't think the Hunger Games universe is interesting enough to have all of these additional stories, because it is a very, like, point A to B plot line, where it's about society, and essentially it ends with history repeats itself is essentially the message at the very end.
Eh.
From my understanding of how the series ends.
I can hear you, but I don't agree. I think this is a really... this is why I like dystopian literature, because it's so close to something that could really happen. Like, right. Some dystopian stuff is, like, way out there. And then this one, much like Handmaid's Tale, for example, those are so close to what we could actually be dealing with.
Right, and I get that, and that's why I like dystopian fiction. But at the same time, it's like, I want to see a different type of dystopian world. Because it's like, this one, it's almost like, what's the gimmick of this dystopian future? Oh, they have a tournament every year where they get a bunch of kids to kill each other. What's the...
Yeah, I guess it's essentially like that. That's, well, I don't like when this series is boiled down to kids are killing each other. Because, well, I've gotten that a bunch where people are like, I don't know why you like this, because this is terrible. This is, well, so sad.
That's not what I mean.
You're missing the point, though.
No, yeah. No. Like, I know the point, but I mean, like, it's essentially every other dystopia, except what's different in this one. It's the tournament aspect of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other thing, too, is, I mean, and we'll obviously get to this because this is later on in the series, is how humans are, like you said, history repeating itself, but even the most morally confident, or I don't know exactly how I want to put this, even the most, like, confident people in their, yeah, I guess it's morally confident, like, you have your morals and you're sticking to them, like, even if you're that guy, If the wrong thing happens to you, you will eventually turn to, for lack of a better term, the dark side of the society. Like, Katniss, at the very end of this, because she has been through hell, is like, that's it. Yeah, I vote for keeping the Hunger Games going, because this is bullshit. Nothing's ever going to change.
Right.
And I have a different reaction to that every time, because I'm like, are you kidding?
No, it is kind of like a... I guess it's one of those endings people just get really upset about, because it's like, you've been fighting for this the whole time and now you're just gonna turn away from all of it. And it's like,
she never wanted to be a leader, so.
Well, if the character has good reason also, it's like, it's an interesting, like, dilemma for that character to be in. And they're mm-hmm. stuck in it. Like, the one I always bring up is Shutter Island, mm-hmm. which, you know, at the very end of it, the main character makes a very crucial choice that decides their fate, and a lot of people were upset with how they actually handled it.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, what's the point if you're just going to complain about the direction of the story? Like, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it. That's the kind of the same attitude I have when people complain to me about spoilers. It's like, well, this is what happened, so if you don't like it, you write your own thing. And yeah, you can make it end the way you want, I guess.
No, and that's... I have that issue with a lot of things, a lot of franchises where people bitch about how they ended. But, you know, I have my own reservations about certain things, and I'm like, okay, you could have put a little bit... Like, once you find out the back end of it, like, how the production was handled... Because, for instance, one of the things that a lot of people will argue about is how the last Star Wars trilogy ended. And
yeah,
I was like totally fine with it. I was like, okay, if that's how they wanted to end it, that's it then. But then you find out in the back end, like, they didn't know how it was going to end, and that the actors were told different things depending on the day, and it was just a mess because it was a mixture of trying to tell a new story and cater to what they thought people wanted. And it's like, right. That's where you're allowed to be upset with how a story is handled.
Oh,
but
yeah,
if one different. Individual has, like, they've written out a story and they present it to you as such, you just need to accept it as it is. You don't take ownership of the characters or of the stories. You will enjoy them, but the original author is the person who is responsible for those characters, essentially.
Yeah. It's a different complaint entirely. It's like, again, if it's valid and you don't, and the story's changing with no direction, like, and no reason to change, that's just lazy and stupid. That's how I feel about it. I just wanted to make sure I don't miss too much.
I have one more comment, and it's about the scoring. I don't like it.
I was wondering if that was the issue, too, is that you don't like the scoring.
That is part of it.
That's why it makes it seem kind of cheap. Because it's a lot of just simple vocal stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Where there's not a lot of, like, if there's an action sequence, it's not filled with music.
I don't have a huge issue with that, because there's movies I like where they do that. I just think it's kind of bland. But where did this budget go? That's my big question, is where did the budget go?
Can't be the CG.
I think it specifically goes to the costume sequence when they're in the Capitol.
The Capitol? Yeah. Because it's crazy.
It's so weird, though, because some of the, like, Lenny Kravitz is in this movie. Like, get him to do the score. I want to see what he could do.
I don't know. I don't know if his vibe is correct for this, but
I know it's not. I just want to know. Okay. I need to know what it would sound like.
Well, you know, it's not an experiment, Zach. It's a movie that they wanted to make.
I understand that. And I also like the conductor for the movie. It's James Newton Howard, who did, like, King Kong, the King Kong remake, and he does, like, a lot of Shyamalan movies, and I'm trying to think of what else he does. Looking it up right now.
While you're looking that up, so I'm glad you brought up Lenny Kravitz, because, you know, he plays Cinna, who is basically Katniss's first real ally outside of her, you know, primary, like, her outside her family, outside her core, you know, group. He comes in, he immediately validates her and listens to her after she's been tossed around and told that she's a surly biatch, pretty much. And so he's her first mentor since her father. And then he's also, spoilers, the first mentor to die, like, her first. And I'm using the word mentor, which is confusing because Haymitch is literally her mentor. But I mean, in the figurative sense, like, he is a friend to her. So he's the first person that she really cares about in a very clearly platonic way to make a connection with her. And then also, spoilers, die, because he dies later on, which I feel like was treated not as well in Catching Fire, the movie, as opposed to the book again.
I agree. Which,
that's going to be a through line. But I love that he's included. He's included so much more in the book, and I just like that he's there, because he's providing her comfort in a time that it's not a very comfortable time, of course. What'd you find out about
Oh, no, he did, like, Atlantis, The Lost Empire, and Treasure Planet. Like, a lot of, like, did Batman Begins. He did the score for that. Dark Knight.
Did you see
him? No, not that one.
Okay. It's just, we just talked about it, so it's in my head. The Avoxes. Did you notice that, you haven't watched Catching Fire yet in a while, but they're costumed differently from movie one to movie two.
Yeah, I think all the costuming improves dramatically in the sequels.
they don't really touch on it in this first movie at all.
I think a big part of it is the fact that, like, maybe they didn't know if this was going to be as big of a hit, because young adult movies are very...
hit or miss.
Well, there's a lot more misses than hits, because, like, yeah. do you remember all of, like, the Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings knockoffs that would come out in, like, the mid-2000s?
Yes and no. Like, it sounds like a slew of things I remember
there was, like, The Seeker, there was Percy Jackson.
Oh, Percy Jackson. I thought that did pretty well, did it not?
I mean, it did and it didn't. It only got two movies in, and... the actors were aged out of the characters by the time they did the second movie. But yeah, it didn't do very well critically. The books were really popular, though, even though the books were blatant just Harry Potter but Greek gods.
Okay, because I still like based them. In Greek god or yeah. Greek.
Yeah, it's all Greek mythology, but like there was those two. Lord of the Rings knockoff was Aragorn, which was like. That was a book series that was big because it was written by a 15-year-old kid, and it's like,
It was? I didn't realize it was written by a kid. I guess maybe I did know that.
Well, because it takes so much of the plot, the setting, and the characters from Lord of the Rings and Star Wars. It's literally those two things put into a blender.
Okay, and then, so, great job, kid, but do we need to make it into a movie? Like, I'm really, really proud of that kid for doing that, but if it's very clearly those two things, did we need to make a movie out of it? I don't know.
that's the whole thing, but like that's why I think. But then even Hunger Games got its own like group of knockoffs with Divergent and The Maze Runner.
Oh, that's the one. That's the other one is Maze Runner.
And there's that TV show, The 100. And there's just a shitload of these, and they all happen around the same time. And they're just they've really like soured my taste on Hunger Games and. This genre of dystopian young adult
I can see content why that would happen. And I the books are so much better. I think I'm just gonna look over the rest of these movie notes really quick to make sure there isn't something crazy that I need to mention. I do like the compliment off. It's a little weird in the movie where Katniss and Peeta are just like, no, you're going to be good at stuff. No, you're going to be good at stuff. I'm going to die. And then they go to training, and it's the quote that came into my mind was, he's sensitive, a painter. And then I just started to sing Chicago in my head after watching that bit. That's why I do like Peeta. And I know that makes me maybe a little basic, but like I said earlier, Gale. I think I like the
performance. Yeah. I like Josh Hutcherson a lot in this.
I like him. I think he's adorable. And have you ever watched really Future like Man? Character. I have. I've seen a couple episodes. I thought it was kind of stupid, but it's fun.
Yeah.
I was like, this is a dumb show. I might watch it again. I don't know.
He's Denny in The Disaster Artist.
Oh, yeah. Denny. Dumb. That's not even a name. Okay. Whatever. I have written down, you get people to like you. That's when Haymitch says that to Katniss, like, how do you find shelter? Which she asks him twice because he's just being a dickhead to her. And she's like, no, I actually need help here. Can you get your shit together? And yeah. Haymitch tells her, you get people to like you, which is like, I guess we'd just pretend that that isn't a problem. And like, I'm glad that we get into the whole, like, this is part of the reason for the series is like, you have to bring up social change. You can't just keep ignoring problems. But when you're pretending and like just trying to get people to like you, that's not going to change anything. So that's why I love. That's one of the other reasons why I love Katniss so much is because she refuses to be a likable character. I had a whole section about this in my thesis is that I love that she has an attitude. And I don't mean like she's like a bitchy teenager. I mean like her demeanor, her disposition is so naturally disagreeable because she's focused on survival and nothing else.
Hell yeah. Characters who refuse to change or grow. Gotcha. That's what Ellen likes, everybody.
Shut the fuck up. I mean, she refuses to change for someone else's amusement. You know that's
what I know what you meant.
It made me so mad. I was like, I have like 6 pages on this, you jerk. As opposed to Bella, for example, who's like, oh, well, I guess I could just die and that would make it okay and we could be together.
I could be with you, but I could be a vampire maybe. I don't know. I'll run into a mirror.
That'll be fine.
I'll have a creepy CGI baby.
And then my best friend will hit on her. That'll be cool. The best part about that movie is Anna Kendrick is just a huge bitch and it's fun. That's what I love about those movies.
All right, let's wrap it up.
Anyway, there's a couple more things. I'm just looking at my notes from the book now that, like, I haven't even talked about Rue, and I'm sorry. We've been talking for a little bit, and I haven't really mentioned her. But that's one of my biggest complaints from book to movie is that there's barely... Like we get.
I was about to make a joke about.
No jokes. we get so much character development between Katniss and Peeta and Katniss and Rue because of the narration and the first person narrative and all the downtime that you're not allowed to really see on screen because it would take forever. That you learn a lot more about the struggles in between the districts that those characters presumably haven't been able to talk about this whole time. And I think that's what kind of hurts the movie too, is that I think it was so focused on action, 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 that really the most important part about the story is these characters who are not doing very well, who are struggling socially, economically, and in mostly every way, don't have access to each other. They're isolated and pretending that everything's fine. Speech over. I don't know how to end that.
I haven't changed my tune on the movie, but I think the book is really good.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff in there. Peeta's a lot more self-deprecating in the book, for sure. I don't know if you remember that, but when you go back to read it, if you do, he's kind of, I know that he's sensitive and that's great and that comes across really well and we love Josh Hutcherson, but in the book I kind of just want to smack Peeta across the face a little bit more than I did on screen. I still like him.
Yeah.
When I was writing this paper a few years ago, I was asked, how do I feel about the fact that Peeta and Katniss end up together at the end? Sorry if that's a spoiler.
Let's skip to we should return to that question, I think.
Okay, but I guess it's something to think about during the next couple episodes. I'll just kind of let everyone think about that.
Yeah.
And how that relates to the female protagonist and like a strong female character not kind of ending up alone. And because I don't really know how I feel about that still, so we'll have to think about it anyway. So everyone just kind of think about how they feel about that. In terms of Rue, do you remember all the hate that they were getting because they cast a black girl?
No, I absolutely remember because that was when I was new to Twitter.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
What a terrible time.
I mean, it's always a terrible time.
It is always a terrible time, but what an introduction. District 11 is where Rue is from. It's a lot of farming, working in fields, and it's a low income district. Now, if we're basing this on the basically North America and a dystopian version of United States and North America in general, who is most likely going to be working in fields, working in a low income situation? I'm not saying that this is right, but I'm asking what makes the most sense there. What would you say?
That I don't know about this conversation right now, Ellen.
I know. I'm just thinking that there's a lot of the rage came from, I can't believe they had to cast a black girl as her little friend. It was like, to me, I thought, we're trying to showcase in a very show-don't-tell way that race plays a part in this story. why do you think she's not featured in the Capitol? Like, there are people of color in the Capitol, but they are not in places of power. I mean, despite, that's, I mean, interesting, aside from, yeah, Senna, who is new, then he immediately disrupts the conversation. So I'm sorry that I sounded like I was trapping you, but I was really just trying to come to that.
I was like, Ellen, what are you doing to me right now? Is this for the last time I, like, put you in an uncomfortable situation?
I was just trying to kind of come to that question naturally, I guess. Rue talks about the fact that they, you know, they work in the fields. They don't really get to have any extra food. Like, if there's a surplus in their district, they don't get to take it. They'll get killed. There was a kid that got murdered for taking, like, the night vision sunglasses that were used to do farming at night, like, during the nighttime. My God, I sound like an idiot right now. My words are not working. So he was murdered because he took those things. And he might have been mentally ill, and he was murdered anyway. So it was just like ableism compounded on racism, compounded on class problems. Like, and then, you know, Katniss had no knowledge of that before talking to somebody from another district. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like, whoa. And then another mention to Cinna is, Cinna is the one who actually saves Katniss's Mockingjay pin for her. Because she kind of forgot about it, and he makes sure that that she has it in the arena. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, how the heck did he get that through? There's a throwaway line that he's like, oh, they kind of gave me a hard time about it because it might be a weapon, but in the end, they kind of just agreed to what I said. And what I'm thinking is that he found somebody who was in the resistance, talked to them, and let her get it through. Because all the while, District 13 is still alive and well, which we don't know yet.
That's an interesting plot hole that you just covered up.
Whoop, there it is. Because I was like, how did he do that? But that makes me think that this world is, and it kind of supports the theory that this world could be a lot bigger than it is currently. Which I know you don't necessarily care for, but
yeah,
I would like to see it.
I don't know. Maybe there's an interesting way to frame that. Maybe I'm just not familiar enough with the source material, because, like I said, I didn't care enough to see the last movie, and yeah, that's kind of where I was standing on it for a while.
So basically, I was able to like Star Wars, and you're just putting your firm foot down.
I'm not putting my foot down. I'm putting my foot down would be me not even trying to rewatch it. And I do like the book. That's what I'm saying. I like the book. It's just the movie, I don't think it's as good as it could have been.
It's definitely not, because there's a lot of there's a lot more solidarity that you see in the book between districts than you do in the movie. At least in the first movie, because there's a moment after Rue is killed where, you know, Katniss sings the song and she, you know, does that funeral bit, which is honestly, watching that doesn't really make me emotional, but reading through that, I was listening to the audiobook today and there were multiple points at which I was just started to tear up because of the way that it is written. Like,
yeah, I think the writing, and like I said, if there was one moment to not do the handheld, I feel like a funeral is it. Because, like, the thing is, handheld is supposed to make things look visceral and kind of odd a little bit. And I think if a funeral happens, like, that's a very real moment if there was a death and you're, like, grieving. So I feel like everything should slow down for that moment almost.
Yes. Yeah. But yeah, so they have that moment, which is, it's okay, could be better, but it just seemed like it was kind of, well, we have to do this and move on, as opposed to when she's writing out, and the writing is so good there. There's a moment where District 11 ends up sending her bread as a thank you. So like there's a showing of solidarity where she actually says into camera, well, quote unquote, into camera in the book, not into a real camera that we can see, you know, thank you. And so you can see how Snow is like, wow, this girl's going to be a pain in my ass, which you don't really get to see that in the movie until like two or three, because she's not in the loop, which we'll have to talk about that on the next one, because I don't agree with leaving her out of the loop. I don't care that she's a bad actor, quote unquote. I tell her what's going on. I think she can handle it. What do we think about? What do you think? I agree. That? It's like she's starving half of her life. Don't you think that she can handle this bit of information? Like, yeah, what's that about? I honestly, what I did like in the movie as opposed to in the book is that Kato, at the end, you see him, you see his face change, where he's like this super aggro kid, and then as he's about to die, he's like pleading for his life, and he knows it's going to go bad either way, and he just says, I can still do this, and he's like crying almost, and I thought that was done really well. Like, I can still make this happen, I can still win, but I also don't want to. And I didn't get that in the book. I thought he was just a dick until the very end, to be honest. Maybe that's just the fact that I can visually see a kid cry. I don't know. Did you notice any difference? Or
I, like I said, there? It's been like 10 years since I read the book, so it's hard for me to compare.
But I mean, specifics. Watching the movie, did you watching feel anything the movie, there?
You know, I just don't give a shit.
did you even make it to the end?
No, I did, but I also just, like, I felt nothing. Like you were saying with Rue's death, there's something about, and I keep saying it, there's something about the movie that just makes it, the disconnect, too great for some reason.
No. I hate it. I hate it.
It's only the movie, though. The book, it's fine.
Yeah, you really get it. You, like I said earlier, you get that connection between characters that you really don't get on screen.
It
should be the opposite. You should be able to see these people, you know, become friends and fall in love slowly without them realizing it. Like,
I think
Katniss loves PETA. She just doesn't understand her love for him. And that's,
I think,
the problem.
It's also another big part of it is maybe everybody doesn't have great chemistry in these movies.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Who are you thinking of specifically?
I'm thinking Jennifer Lawrence and anybody else on screen.
Yeah, I think it gets better with Josh Hutcherson, but it definitely doesn't improve with Gale.
Yeah, I also just think maybe it's because Jennifer Lawrence looks like a full-grown woman and Josh Hutcherson has a little baby face.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's part of it.
He does look a lot younger, and it gets worse as the series goes on in one way. I mean, maybe it's just because I'm so used to it. I'm like, oh, well, that's Katniss and PETA, so that's that they, I believe that they're maybe best friends, maybe in love, because that's what I read about. But, you know, when he is in the Capitol, in prison, spoilers, he just looks like shit, and he looks even younger because he's being starved to death, basically, and tortured. He looks even younger than he did at the beginning.
Yeah.
Which is just like, what?
I think the blonde hair looks weird on Josh Hutcherson, too.
Yeah, I
think
like
that's
it.
Part of it. All right, I think we should wrap this up, though. This All right. I can't even imagine what the next three are going to be like.
They'll be better. I promise.
Well, I just mean, like, in terms of, like, length and us having this conversation. Because, like we were saying, in the last two halves, like, I strongly dislike a lot of what they do in the movie anyway.
Oh yeah, since you're already being a hater for this one.
Well, I wouldn't even call myself a hater. I just think this movie is fine, and I think the reason I'm so upset is because I liked the book a lot and there's a lot of missed potential.
Yeah, it's just I don't know if this story should have been made into a movie, because like we said at the very top, it's just full on narration for most of the part. Like,
well, also you can do
in
narration
head.
In the movie.
Yeah, you can. You can do voiceovers, which I don't know if I would like that though. I feel like it would come off as like disingenuous almost.
Well, I think there's a way to do it though. they're not even just as narration, but in some kind of like, I don't know, maybe like reflexive way that she's writing it. Like
better sound design would help too, I think.
Yeah, that too. I think as a whole, I think this would be better as a mini series, like a limited event series.
Mm-hmm. I think I agree with that because you're going to get into those little relationships. This is kind of what I'm telling our friend Zoe, who was on our earlier podcast. She's working on something right now that has a lot of like complicated relationships between young kids, young adults, not young kids. That's two different things. And I told her, I was like, I think this is going to work better in smaller bits because you have all of these little nuances between these people that people are, that, you know, viewers are going to want to see as opposed to just this A to B plot. I agree. I think you would get to know Katniss better. You would maybe get to know her mother a little bit more. That's somebody that I would really love to learn about more.
Yeah. You know, you said there was that Susan Collins, like, graphic novel.
Not Susan Collins.
That's Suzanne Collins. Sorry, CP3O.
See, I told you. You should have corrected me.
Well, now I feel put very on the spot, and I wouldn't have cared if somebody told me after the fact.
I'm just thinking, Susan Collins.
Is that Phil Collins' wife?
A politician. No, she's a politician.
Okay.
Sorry.
No, what I was saying was you have that tiny graphic novel pamphlet that you were just telling me about. I think this would be an interesting adaptation for a graphic novel, and that's all I'll say about it.
Yeah, that would be interesting. It would work. It kind of the story
it might already exist too.
It probably does. I don't know. I'll look it up. All right, yeah, if we should be done, because otherwise I'll go into my Caesar Flickerman voice or something soon. Which, speaking of, Stanley Tucci is in this movie, and he's in a few more. He's in the next one, of course, because they have another Hunger Games, but I don't think he's in the last two, because he really has no reason to be there.
Yeah, Wes Bentley has some of the most incredible facial hair ever in this movie.
Oh, Seneca Crane?
Yeah.
That's okay. Yeah.
It by incredible, I just mean like
dumbest.
What the fuck? Yeah, it's pretty dumb.
Yeah, and I guess so. You had sent me that little article about Stanley Tucci having cancer and having it be he was cured. He was treated for it 3 years ago, and nobody knew about it. Is that what was going on?
I guess I misread the article. If that was the case.
Yeah.
I don't remember sending you an article. I remember seeing.
You sent me something. I don't know what it was. But I was pleased to learn upon reading more about him because I didn't know about this. Is that
okay? Yeah, it is unlikely to return. I had to look it up.
Yeah. But I didn't realize that he was a fashion model earlier on in his career, which makes a lot more sense considering he's in burlesque and a Devil Wears Prada. And yeah.
I like Transformers 4.
I don't care about that.
He's also in Percy Jackson.
I just like that he is in Captain America as the German scientist who finds him. And then I wish
he's great in Easy A also.
That's true. He's great. I love him.
Have you ever watched his show where he's traveling around?
No, that sounds great.
It's wonderful.
Is that our suggestion for the day, I think?
Yeah, I guess so. Okay. It's called Stanley Tucci Searching for Italy.
It sounds a lot better than Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee.
It's pretty good. He's also in Central Park. I forgot about that.
Okay. Yeah, just go watch a Stanley Tucci movie. That's my suggestion to you all.
Watch his Italian show.
Okay, that sounds good. All right, well, this has been a bonus episode. And so there you go. And if you're listening, that means you're already a patron. So thanks, people. I appreciate
thank you so much.
You for being a patron.
We won't plug shit because you already pay for all
you,
of
you, you have it. Yeah. You probably have some of it. You probably have a majority of it. But there's more things on there, maybe.
We're not going to plug things and then we plug things.
I know. I'm just saying there's more to be
I know.
To be looked at. Yeah, and then we'll be back with, I know we have to do a couple more bonus things coming up. We'll be back with another Hunger Games.
Another catching fire. We'll be
okay, we will catch some fire. Okay.
I will set Ellen on fire.
Please don't set me on jump fire.
Through, she'll ride a bike through a hoop.
That's a different thing. I don't know what that is.
That's just like an Evel Knievel type
thing. Oh, okay. I was like, I don't know what that has to do with the Hunger Games.
You're catching on fire.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll be lifted out of the arena with terrible CGI. That's in the second movie.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I can't wait to talk about that because it looks like shit. Okay, goodbye, everyone.
Bye.
Hey listeners, it's Ellen. Just checking in with you to see if you have checked out the Green Buffalo Productions Patreon lately. Right now we have extra episodes of Celluloid Stage. We also have some special audio presentations of original plays. Our most recent audio production was XOXO Buffalo, which was a collaboration with Inclusive Theater of Western New York and featured four plays, one by Amy Levesque, one by Justin Pope, one by Dallas Taylor, and one by myself, Ellen Shearer. Another thing we have on Patreon is our taping of our first ever Comedy Queen, one that we recorded in quarantine, that featured Katarina Valentine and Rachel Tashari. Membership can be anywhere from $1 a month to as much as you want to donate. Either way, you are contributing to local Western New York creators. Go to patreon.com/greenbuffaloproductions to sign up or for more information. All right, that's all for me. Enjoy this episode.